Gary Allen, and we're going to bring up the mic because we have a guest in our second hour today who is Carol Osternick, who is famous for her Gossips of Rivertown. And I am a subscriber, and if you haven't subscribed, you can go to Gossips of Rivertown. How do you subscribe?
Well, subscribing is easy. You just send an email to me and say, I want to be notified when something new is published. And you get on the list, and the little blast goes out whenever a new post goes on. And but, you know, if you want to subscribe, if you want to donate money to help keep the effort going, then that's simple. There's a little, you know, I probably can't do this on the, on the radio, but there's
from the WGXC newsroom. This is the
See?
I don't know how that happened either.
Well, I was being punished. I was being punished for promoting donations to the Gossips of Rivertown.
Oh, I guess so. I don't know what happened there. But anyway, I think I put my arm out and I bumped the mouse, which then caused us to have a moment of Phil Graham back again before I managed to silence him.
Well.
Anyway, what's the email that you do to who do you email to subscribe?
The email address is Carol with a final silent E at gossipsofrivertown.com.
So, Carol at gossipsofrivertown.com.
And to find the blog, I'm told all you need to do is Google Carol Gossips or just plain Gossips and it'll pop up.
Yes, I think that's how somebody mentioned it to me and I Googled it and here I am and I'm a subscriber. And I was telling you earlier that I save up the articles and then I read like the days because there are three or four posts during the day. And then I read all of them at once when I've got a little time or maybe when I'm having lunch or something like that to get caught up in what's going on around town.
Yes.
Yeah. And so how did you get started doing this, Carol?
Well,
because I don't know that story.
Well, there are two stories I want to tell, how the Gossips got to be and where the name came from. So actually, the Gossips of Rivertown, it's probably safe to say, was inspired by a bar that was just over here in what is now Park Falafel in that building. It was a bar where there were pole dancers, total nudity, etc., etc. And the Common Council, and I was on the Common Council at the time, decided this can't happen, so we needed to change the zoning so that such kinds of adult entertainment would be restricted to places other than, you know, the central.
And what year was this?
This was 2007 or 8.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And so that, you know, that was the reason that it started in a kind of, you know, sort of circuitous way. I was on the council. We were, you know, we were planning to, you know, do this, have these restricted zones where adult entertainment could be. And someone who was one of my constituents, not understanding totally the issues, was like absolutely appalled by the whole thing. And I decided that there needed to be a way for people to get the message out to, you know, out to their constituents. And I started a blog called First Ward Hudson, which went to, you know, my constituents in the First Ward. And it explained, you know, it talked about all the things that were going on in the Common Council, all the issues before the city. And then in 2010, after losing re-election at the end of 2009, I decided to make it a blog about the entire city and to use, you know, to sort of cobble together my knowledge of Hudson history, my experience in Hudson politics, and my, you know, lifelong experience in publishing to do this blog. And that's became the Gossips of Rivertown, which was introduced on the 20th of January, 2010.
Wow. I'm still trying to assimilate the pole dancing because I didn't even realize that was going on. I think maybe vaguely I knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I once had a steak dinner, because that the space where Park Falafel is has been a variety of things over the years. Mm-hmm. And the pole dancing apparently is one I just sort of slipped through.
It was a brief moment. Originally, they were supposed to open down on 2nd Street, but the code enforcement officer at the time shut them down because they were doing some, building code violations. And so they decided to move here. And it had been a restaurant before, and they were, serving, because it had to be a juice bar if it's, a total nudity dance place. So, they sort of circumvented the planning board and opened up this, this place called the Lone Wolf. It didn't last for very long, but it was there.
It didn't. I vaguely remember the story of the pole dancers now that you mention mm-hmm. it, but it went right by me. But then I was still a weekender then, so I wasn't so totally on top of it. And I'm not one to go for pole dancers anyway. I seek them out. So wow. And so what have you discovered as you've been doing Gossips of Rivertown?
Well, I have discovered innumerable things. I consider Gossips to be just this wonderful, intellectual self-indulgence because in the past I've had an academic career through graduate school. You would do research, you would find wonderful things, but it all had to fit into this, sort of larger thesis that you were creating. But, when you do gossip, you find something fascinating, you publish it and tell the rest of, share it with other people. It's like, having a whole audience to which you should say, listen to this and share a little, news item or investigate. I mean, I've had lots of obsessions in the 7.5 years that I've been doing gossips. I've, been obsessed with Fred W. Jones, the owner of the Hudson Shell Coral and Marble Company, and with the ubiquitous Officer Miller, and now I'm pursuing World War I through the lens of Hudson News. So it's a great indulgence, and it's great fun. Besides, I report on important things that are happening in Hudson and often, get stories before other people do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, yesterday, when a reader submitted the story about the cliff down from Promenade Hill that's being now stripped of all of its foliage. They're going to take away the loose rock in the soil and then treat it with what's called shotcrete, which is, sort of a cement product that is, kind of sandblasted onto the surface of the rock. So, I mean, this I was able to find out about the day after they started the project.
Mm-hmm. Didn't know anything about it.
Nobody did. And I published about it. Then I sent an email to the mayor and other people in City Hall. And, nobody apparently knew anything about what was going on. But it's going to alter the face of Hudson as it appears to people traveling on the river, and it's serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I, again, something that, like the Lone Wolf, but there's so much that goes on in Hudson that is just so unique to this town.
Well, I'm glad to hear someone else say that. I think, Hudson surprises me all the time, but this is the first time since, I was a child growing up that I'd lived in a place as long as I've lived in Hudson and sort of, dug into what was going on. So I'm wondering if all places aren't really like Hudson or if it is genuinely.
I mean, it could be just because, and I don't live in Hudson. You live in Hudson. I live out in Claverick.
Mm-hmm.
which I sometimes am glad that I have just a little bit of distance. Also, I couldn't have, you know, because I live on a couple of acres of land on the creek, and I wouldn't be able to do that if I were in Hudson. But it does seem to be unique. But I have never lived for a long time in a community of this size. When I was in graduate school, I did, sort of. But I was like hell-bent on getting my master's and getting out of town, getting out of Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find this just an amazing area for all kinds of reasons. You know, it's Roy and I were talking about the fact that we felt we both could breathe better here than we could down in the city. But it does seem that it seems a bit more Byzantine than most places that I've encountered. But I don't know whether that's every place is as Byzantine or if it's just Hudson.
Well, that's, you know, that's sort of my sense too, that it, you know, the long, deeply held suspicion of people who didn't grow up here, and, you know, the tight affiliation of the people who did, you know, they can be at loggerheads politically, but they're still, you know, it's like, you're my enemy, but your enemies are my enemies too. So, you know, there's kind of a tight-knit sense here that, you know, people who have gone to high school together, you know, will stick together no matter what.
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Minneapolis, and a friend of mine moved from New York to Minneapolis to work for one of the ad agencies there. Not ad agencies. He went to work in the media department of, I think, General Mills or Pillsbury. And he loved Minneapolis, but his comment was, I realize that because I'm not from here, people are incredibly nice and incredibly friendly, but we don't really form a real relationship.
Hmm.
You know, the relationship that you have is because you grew up here. Those are the people that you are really tight with. I don't know if it's so much that way anymore, but I have also, because I've been here 17 years now, or 16 and a half, and, you know, I'm still an outsider to most people, I think, unless I'm dealing with people who also moved here.
Right.
So it's a very interesting dynamic.
Well, I've lived in Hudson now for almost 25 years.
Wow.
And, you know, to some, I'm still an outsider.
Where did you come from?
Well, I grew up in Holland, Michigan.
In where in Michigan?
Holland.
Holland, Michigan.
Tulip time, Holland, Michigan. And then I went to graduate school in North Carolina at Duke. Then I went to New York. I was in graduate school at Columbia. I stayed in New York for, you know, the biggest chunk of my adult life. And then sort of followed a publishing career to Boston, to San Antonio, to Orlando, at which point I jumped ship. I found living in Orlando a little hard and came back to the Hudson Valley.
And what kind of publishing were you doing?
Educational publishing.
Okay. And I'm going to be in Orlando on Saturday for a moment. I'm flying down Friday to Miami, helping a friend drive his parents' car back. We're going to Orlando, putting it on the auto train, getting up to D.C., and then driving the rest of the way up here. But, I find, with the exception, Miami Beach, I feel sort of a familiarity with because I have friends who live there and I visit it fairly often. But I find Florida a unique place.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It definitely is. Not that, you know, I didn't stay there for very long. I think I lived in Orlando for I know it was less than a year. I think it may have been 9 or 10 months, but that was enough.
Yeah. And so what's going on that we should all know about, Carol?
Oh, well, of course, we've been, you know, watching the Hall Road for a very long time. And I reported late last night, early this morning, what happened last night at the special meeting of the Greenport Planning Board, Greenport being the lead agency in the SEACR review, State Environmental Quality Review, for this project. And they, you know, they went through part two, which is the part that the planning board is responsible for. It's a series of 18 categories with more specific items underneath each one. And you have the choice of saying no impact or small impact or moderate to large impact. And they went through and said no or small impact on, you know, just every item. And at their next meeting on the 28th, they will be, you know, making their final decision about whether they will declare a positive or negative declaration on that project. So that's something to be watched.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we are 2 days away from the deadline for filing designating petitions. So we have the, you know, the local elections coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be interesting. It, you know, I will predict that it will be all over when the Democratic primary is over, because, you know, I don't think that any of the other parties are putting up candidates. But you don't know.
You don't know
until the petitions are filed.
Mm-hmm. And what have you been discovering? Because this is 100 years ago. World War One was being fought.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious as to what you have been finding through your looking through the lens of history about what Hudson was like 100 years ago.
Well, it seemed to be a quite different place. Quite different, but not really. I mean, the city seemed to have a great sense of community. There seemed to be a fair number of wealthy people in the city. I was stunned at the amount of money, you know, they were doing this fundraising effort for the Red Cross, and it started with $100 donation that someone had given. And at the end, a young woman stood up and said, I'm going to give you another $100. Well, it turns out that $100 in 1917 is like several thousand dollars. I mean, it's the equivalent of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there were people with that ability to give that amount of money. And that was kind of interesting. I discovered this wonderful sort of tradition of high school students in it was part of graduation week ceremonies, and they elected from the graduating class, they actually did that the previous year, someone who was called the Grand Muckety Muck, a male from the graduating class. And so the Grand Muckety Muck and all of the other students that were graduating would parade through the streets. This was like the night after graduation, wearing nightshirts with their class year painted on the back. And they would go around to serenade the girls from the graduating class, as well as their teachers and members of the school board.
And I remember reading about this.
Yeah, and they ended up in front of what is now Hudson Lodge, formerly the Elks Lodge, serenading Grace Gillette, who was their favorite member of the school board. And she was, and along the way they would stop for ice cream and peanuts. That's what people would be giving them, ice cream and peanuts. And they stopped there, and she had fireworks or something to celebrate. And then, prior to the march, they elected the Grand Muckety Muck for the next year, which I thought was just, sort of a fascinating kind of little tradition.
And you just I wonder how long that went on.
Well, it was suggested, and one thing I should point out is that the graduating class of 1917 had more women than men. There were like 10 men who graduated and 19 women.
Wow.
Which I found pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. 'Cause these, you know, you could understand if this were a college graduating class, because there would be, you know, men, young men absent because they'd already joined the army or joined the Canadian army or whatever. But mm-hmm. this was, you know, this was the high school graduating class with many more women than men.
That is interesting. Mm-hmm. That is interesting. And high school was more like, I mean, to have a high school degree in 1917 was in a way sort of like saying you had a college degree today, as I understand it.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. It was, there were lots of people who didn't complete college or high school.
No, I know.
And it was, you know, it was, or, you know, I think it's probably, I'm more comfortable saying that the college degree has sort of been devalued to that level rather than, you know.
Yeah. I know, it's just, it's, and I, you know, I sort of have a feel for that time because I am the youngest son of the youngest son. And my father was in his 50s when I was born.
Hmm.
Was 51. And he was on his way to serve in World War I when the armistice was called. So, and his older brother was in the Merchant Marine and during World War I. And so I would hear them talk about that period of time. So it was pretty interesting. And my uncle never went beyond sixth grade, but ended up being very successful mm-hmm. and on the board of directors of a big company and everything. But it was not always that people in that era necessarily graduated from high school. Mm-hmm. So what else have you learned about the history of Hudson? Because it also had this really colorful period when it was like, it sounded like whorehouse central for New York.
Well, it was. But that, you know, that goes back to the days that it was, you know, it was a seaport. And that's, you know, sort of typical of all seaports. But I think that, and I get the impression that the heyday of the brothels was like in the 40s and 50s when it was no longer a seaport.
Yeah.
There are stories about, you know, people driving down what's now Columbia Street and seeing all of these cars from different states who had, you know, people who had come to Hudson to visit the brothels. And there's a wonderful story. This is not one that I've told in gossips, but there was a building known as the Chicken Shack that stands on Columbia Street where that giant parking lot with the wall is that, you know, for the county office building that's just across the street. Well, the Chicken Shack stood there. And the family of a woman named Astosia Berry, who has since passed away, owned the Chicken Shack. And they moved up here from Brooklyn, or maybe the Bronx, I can't recall. But the family had a number of girls, and they thought that they would move to, you know, Hudson because it would be a safer environment for them to grow up. And they ended up buying a house in the middle of what was Diamond Street, Hudson's notorious red light district, but they didn't know it. And they were just so confused that, you know, every weekend there would be all of these tourists who would come to their block, and they didn't, you know, it took them a while to figure out what was going on. But they kind of, you know, if life hands you lemons, make lemonade. They turned their house into a restaurant called the Chicken Shack, and they served the madam and the girls and the Johns who came, and they had a very successful business in, you know, the center of Diamond Street.
When did Diamond Street cease being Diamond Street?
It was 1950 when Governor Thomas Dewey sent in the state police to shut down the brothels and all of the illegal gambling and everything else that happened in Hudson, and I think that's the point. And actually, it wasn't all of Columbia Street that was called Diamond Street. At one time, Columbia Street had several different names. The part up here was called Gifford Place, then it was Diamond Street, and then below Third was Fulton Street.
Wow.
And then, I mean, and farther up, when you get past this intersection, that's when it started being called Columbia Street. So I think in the 50s, it was the time when it was, the whole street was renamed
Columbia
Street.
Yeah. Wow. Perhaps that historical context explains some of the uniqueness of Hudson today.
Well, it's true, I suppose. Yeah. I did want to talk about the name of my blog, The Gossips of Rivertown, because although I note this on, you know, on the front page or of the blog, I just want to...
Just before you tell that story, I need to remind people that they're listening to Carol Osternick and Matthew Tombers on the Wednesday morning version of The Morning Show at WGXC, ACRA, Hudson, Catskill, all those places in Columbia and Greene County. We are the voice of Columbia and Greene counties and Greene and Columbia counties, and we're listening to Carol Osternick tell about the history of the name of her blog.
I took the name from a novel written in 1850 by a woman named Alice B. Neal. She was born in Hudson, grew up in Hudson, married very young, was widowed by the age of 19. She married the editor of a woman's magazine in Philadelphia, so she left Hudson and went to Philadelphia. She took over the magazine after her husband died, and then she married another publisher. She herself died when she was only 36. But her book, The Gossips of Rivertown, which is set in Hudson and inspired by Hudson, was the only book. She once confessed that it was the only thing she'd written that she was sad that she had written. She regretted writing it because most of her books, many of them written under the name Cousin Alice, were these sort of moral uplifting stories for children. And The Gossips of Rivertown was for adults. It's sarcastic, it's catty, it's snarky, and it's just a wonderful story. And when it was first published, it was serialized in Godet's Ladies' Book. And when I started The Gossips of Rivertown, I serialized the book on Gossip. So, it's now, you can read it on Google Books, you can read it online in many different ways. But I just decided that I would do this. If I ran out of news, I would have something I could publish. But I find I never run out of news in Hudson.
Yes, no, I can't imagine that you would, because there's always something going on. Mm-hmm. Some interesting, and perhaps it's just the microcosm of cities.
Well,
because I think we are a microcosm of mm-hmm. what goes on in larger cities.
Oh, I absolutely agree. In fact, I have, as you're probably aware, I have this little feature that I do from time to time called Micropolitan Diary, which is a blatant imitation of Metropolitan Diary in the New York Times, mm-hmm. which, sort of tells these little stories of things that happen in Hudson, usually that happen to me and my dog.
And what's your favorite story like that?
Oh, dear. I think my favorite story is the one that inspired the feature in the first place, which is when I was walking my dog, Joey, and I'd come from Bruno's and I was carrying a bunch of groceries, and Joey pooped, and I, struggled to get the bag out and sort of cursed, realizing that there was not a trash barrel between where we were and my house, so I was going to have to carry the poop bag and the leash and I after struggling to pick up the poop and not the bag, I looked up and there was a DPW guy with a bucket standing in front of me, proffering the bucket for me to, put the poop bag in. And that, you know, that sort of inspired, you know, it was like, I need a way to be able to tell this story.
Yeah. Well, there are great stories. Any other great story that you'd like to share with us today?
Oh, dear. There are too many great stories.
I know. That's what makes the Gossip of Rivertown so much fun, is that there's all this news and gossip and what's going on. I mean, if I really want to know what's going on in town, I do try to read the Gossip of Rivertown, because generally you are on top of things.
Well, I try to be. And I one of the things that I truly like is that there are people out there who are gossips readers who are constantly sending me pictures, tips, you know, sometimes, you know, fully developed stories, as yesterday when Richard Wallace sent me a story and I published it exactly as he wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I may have added a serial comma somewhere.
Yeah.
But that's what, you know, that's what I like. People, you know, people like look to gossips as a potential platform, as, you know, as a means of sharing information that they think needs to be shared with the community. And that's, you know, I think that's makes gossips a very important thing for our community.
Yeah, and you have something like 12 to 15,000 page views a week?
I sort of like to think of them in days. There was a time when, you know, 1,000 page views a day was, you know, like cause for celebration, and then it became 2,000. And now I regularly break 3,000. So, you know, that means that there are some weeks. I'm still looking for the 20,000 page view week. It hasn't happened yet, but
it will.
I'm hoping.
It will. And to help make that happen, let's again let people know how they can subscribe to The Gossips of Rivertown by Carol Osternick.
Okay, the blog's address is gossipsofrivertown.com, and if you want to be notified whenever something new appears on the blog, and I warn you that will happen 3 or 4 times a day, then you just send an email to Carol with a final silent E at gossipsofrivertown.com.
Okay. Thank you very much, Carol. I'm gonna go back and we're going to play a little more Jerry Allen for a minute while I say goodbye personally and thank Carol for being here. And we're going to start this. Let's see if we can get this going. Mm-hmm. Okay.